I am not going to open this meeting and explain the purpose of it, and then hand over to Honorable Ndlela to chair the meeting. The reason being that I am chairing an ad hoc committee on the filling of vacant seats for the Commission on Gender Equality, and we are conducting interviews today and tomorrow. So I am then going to leave so that I can start that meeting at 10, which is going to be a meeting 25 hours today. And I have asked Honorable to then fill it in my place. And let me take this opportunity to welcome all the stakeholders. I can see that we have a full house, which means we are discussing a matter of interest. The purpose of the meeting is to get a response from the Department of Transport on public transport subsidy. We will all remember that we have had presentations from different role players, service providers in transport. The first one was from Sabor, and their presentation was on the issue of they were concerned that their contracts were running on a month-to-month, and they wanted a confirmation by the department that they can have contracts that are running for a longer period, because if they operate on a month-to-month basis, they are then unable to capitalize their business, because they would not be able to invest on contracts that do not have certainty in terms of how they are, for how long they are going to run. So in terms of investment, they feel that they are then disadvantaged. They operate under uncertainty. On the other hand, we then had a presentation from the small bus operator who was saying that they feel that they are marginalized, in a sense that they are operating without a subsidy. They are not subsidized at all. And then the SANPARKO also came in to say that they feel marginalized because they carry about 70% of the passengers, yet they are not subsidized. We also have our own view as members of the portfolio committee, and also as different parties within the portfolio committee. There would be a view of the ANC study group within the portfolio committee, and a view of the Democratic Alliance within the portfolio committee. But where we are able to find one another at portfolio committee level, and this is what we are recommending on the budget review recommendations report, is that we are agreeing as a portfolio committee that there has to be an integrated transport ticketing system. We must have a single ticketing system in South Africa where we are finding each other. And that is what our report is saying, that we are recommending to the department should then move us to introduce a single ticketing system. We think that if we do that, we would then give a passenger an option of choosing the best service provider. So the competition will be based on the standard of service that is being offered. We also think that it would assist in a sense that if a train is late, the passenger can then choose and go and take a bus or take a taxi. You are not forced to pay because you have a ticket that is for the train. And we also think that if we do that, we will even reduce the problem of paying off the train when the train is late. But we also think that passengers would get the best service that they deserve, because we will not then be forced to use one particular trunk, even if the service provider is treating you badly. So it would force the service provider to respect the passengers, because the passengers are the source of their income. But under the current situation, the passengers are treated as if they are being done a favor when they are transported, whereas it is the passenger that is doing the service provider a favor. The survival of the service provider depends on the passenger. But the manner in which passengers are treated under the current situation are actually as if they are being done a favor. We also think that the government has got more responsibility to the passenger than to the service provider. Service provider here benefits because the government is responsible to the service provider. That's where we are. However, in terms of the subsidy, we want to hear what the department is going to be saying. The answer study could be that a subsidy that goes to the passenger would be more appropriate than a subsidy that goes to the service provider, because that subsidy that goes to the service provider has discriminated other service providers, and in our view, it is against the constitution of this country. Our constitution is based on non-discrimination, and then the subsidy that is given is based on a contract and a service provider discriminating other service providers, and therefore discriminating other passengers who are not using the services of the service provider that is currently subsidized. And we would want the department then to respond and align the subsidy to the constitution of the country. If 70% of passengers are using the taxi using taxi industry, and are therefore not subsidized by virtue of the fact that the taxi industry is not being subsidized, it means that 70% of passengers are actually discriminated against, which is what is against the constitution of the country. You should not be discriminated against on the basis of what kind of transport you are using. So the department has then a responsibility of finding ways of ensuring that all passengers enjoy the benefits of the subsidized transport, or all service providers enjoy the benefits of the subsidized transport. It should not be bus operators who have contracts that are then subsidized. If it is that way, it is then against the constitution of the country. We are also saying that we would want to get more information on what informed this approach of subsidizing certain passengers and not subsidizing other passengers. Why we are doing that in South Africa when we have a constitution that says we should not be discriminating against any person. The third issue is that we have transport modes in this country that are not universally accessible to all passengers, particularly the civil aviation mode of transport. It is still a preserve of the bridge, so it is on class basis. And we are then saying that we would like the aviation mode of transport to be accessible to all and reflect the demographics of the country. We are also saying that there are certain groups in our society, like the scholars and the pensioners and people with disabilities, that should be looked at to say, are we fair when we don't have a system that gives discount to scholar transport, to scholars, irrespective of what mode of transport they are using, as well as the pensioners, as well as people with disabilities? How are we opening all transport modes to be accessible by all? And the last issue, which we would want the department to go away also and work on, is how our scholar transport is structured and how that scholar transport is contracted, and how does it address issues of poverty and inequalities that exist in transport. We are not expecting you to respond today to that, but it is something that also falls within the issue of subsidy. And it is something that also falls within the issue of dealing with inequalities that exist in our society. So, all in all today, we are expecting the department to respond. The department has been part of the presentations that were made by all the stakeholders, including SACOA, the small bus operators, the taxi industry, the South African Commuters Organization. And we are then today going to be listening to the department to hear what their views are and what direction they think that we should be taking to try and deal with this issue. I will not waste time, and I will just move up after this and allow Mandela to then take over and share the message. Honorable colleagues.
Chairperson, thank you for your introduction. I just wanted to say, as the DA study group, there's one of your points we don't completely agree with, and that is the one about it being unconstitutional to discriminate. The Constitution talks about unfair discrimination, not discrimination itself. And if you look at the things that we have running in the country right now, I mean, the e-toll discriminates. It only operates in one province. It doesn't charge taxis and buses at public transport, but it does charge cars. That's a form of discrimination. But it's in a sense legitimate because we are assisting public transport. So I think it's important to realize the Constitution says unfair discrimination, not any discrimination. BEE legislation is discrimination in a sense. But it's not unfair discrimination because it's logic. Because of apartheid, we therefore have BEE legislation to make a correction. But it is itself a discrimination. E-toll is a discrimination. The taxi recap program is in effect discrimination because it only goes to taxis, not to small bus operators. So there are lots of forms of discrimination, but the question is not whether it's constitutionally acceptable, it's whether it's fair. The question that you have to ask on balance is it a fair form of discrimination, because there are unfair forms of discrimination and fair forms of discrimination. So I'm just cautioning to say that it's unconstitutional. if you can explain the logical reason for the discrimination, like with BEE legislation, then you would say it's fair. It's a question not of whether or not to discriminate, but whether or not it's a fair discrimination, and that's a debate, it's a discussion, and courts take different views on it. Thanks.
I understand that what you are saying, it is something that we will debate when we are debating as different political parties. The DA has the right to its views, and the ANC also has the right to its views. The fact of the matter is that in terms of e-tolling, the e-tolling is a system of collecting money. The policy that informs the user pay system is the user pay policy, which is a policy of the government, approved by the government. And the issue of also the exclusion or the exemption of some cars like the public transport is also informed by the cross-subsidization policy, which is the government policy. So we are not going to be debating e-tolling. Whenever we discuss other issues, then we bring in e-tolling. E-tolling is a system of paying. You choose to pay by cash, or you choose to pay by a card. That is the difference. When you buy a tag, you are choosing to pay by card. When you don't buy the tag, you are choosing to pay by cash. But the policies that inform the toll roads, whether we must have toll roads in South Africa, that is informed by different policies. It is the policy of the user fee which informs the establishment of standards. So there is an act that establishes standards and gives standards a mandate to go and borrow money, and we are not going to be debating that issue each time we are sitting here and dealing with other issues. Thank you very much. Let me just say it is unfortunate, really, that if it was unfortunate, I would just say no. Even if I was permanently going to take a portfolio committee, I would say no. Fire me. If you want me to change, but you really hate it. I really hate it. So what I'm saying is, please be patient with me. And one other unfortunate part of it is, yes, there's this problem of least everything, people are going up and down. I'm just sitting put because those things don't affect me. Meaning, it might be the last time for us to meet, because next year, even my last born of the committee here, not here, I will not see him again. Not that I'm going to die, Matabata, I'm not going to die. Maybe die. But being with him, we have been a family. Yeah. Nobody will say to a director or a DG, Matabata, I'm the only one qualified, and it is through you accepted me as I am. That I appreciate. Even the members of the portfolio committee, I even forget their names. I want to speak to Ian, but I've forgotten that this is Ian. That is how I am. But all in all, I am saying it has been nice having you this past year. You tolerated me. In fact, I also tolerated you. I don't think you were angels. You were not. But we went on like a family. We fight, we laugh, and here we are. So I really take that opportunity for 5 years I've been with you. Next year, even if the parliament calls me for a meeting, maybe, because I've been in the garden. I won't come in. Now my job is to look after my garden. See that there is maize, there are carrots, there's every vegetable there if it rains. That is going to be my duty. And I wish you every good thing. Whatever the next time I want to see you as president. Not yes. In that manner. I know Ian is going to be the leader of the DA in Parliament. That was what was going to happen. But anyway, it has been nice being with you, really. All of you. Thank you for that. Now, over to you, Department. But Masrata, can I really go to pension with my Shabagalula?
Good morning, Manja. Good morning to all the members of the Portfolio Committee and the various public transport stakeholders. Before we start, I think probably it's important that I introduce the transport team that is here, responding to first the call by the Portfolio Committee to come respond to the call for a meeting, but secondly to respond to what was asked of us to do. As I said, my name is Boitu Vilani. I'm the Acting Director General of the Department of Transport. With me is the DDC responsible for public transport, Makaba Tamkonya. And then we have Ms. Musanda Matikizana, who is the Chief Director.
The first question, Dina is new to the Portfolio Committee. I'm sure you know that you have seen this lady in black. She said, Mama, is this the department? Then I said, yes, that's the members of the department. And she said, all men, your money is in a way to come from the Namu to be the only one amongst. Oh, my way to know
my Thank you.
What
I'm trying to what the highlight
of that family. I want to know.
Yeah,
I know.
What I'm and then, when I'm taking a seat, who's the director in my office. And then, Charles Lisiba, director also of bus transport. And then we know that Vuyo Yekan, a communist, and then also Tabani, unless I mix them, I can't have. And that's the team, Mangana, that we have in front. I think before my Tabata comes in, I think it becomes important that from our side, as the department, we contextualize the role of public transport and know how key it is in the movement of our people. I think there are a couple of issues that we want to do, and Masarata will respond to some of the specifics that are raised by each other. The issues of the month-to-month contract. And in the same sense, knows why we are only month-to-month contract, zero scholar transport. At the heart of our response, I'm trying to say, where are we going with public transport subsidies? Are a number of issues. The first issue, in our view, and we just want to be clear that it becomes important from the perspective of public transport service provision that we need to maintain current services and service level. It becomes important that the necessity that indeed we are every department committed. But the second certainty that we want to express is that there is a need to transform the sector. We are quite busy with the plans of trying to transform the sector. And in transforming the sector, is that we will transform it through the implementation of the revised public transport strategy, trying to bring it injected into the public transport subsidy regime, but also bringing in small bus operators. So those are the key things that would be at the heart of our response. But also, of course, in the context of what is asked of us to do is to go back and relook at the issue around passage size and traffic. That's our the passenger side subsidy. But of course, in the also the reform around operations, the issue that the chairperson raised around the single ticketing system becomes important in how we, going forward, in how we would want to integrate the use of public transport, begin the process of bringing up a single ticketing system. Of course, there exist platforms within the state environment, and therefore there's going to be needs to look at. So I thought it becomes important to chairperson to contextualize this one. And I'll ask Matabat to then get on into the real issues that do it. That's especially. Thank you, chairperson.
Thank you very much, Mahoat, Acting Director General. Mr. Mawetu Bidan. Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, industry stakeholders and colleagues, thanks for the opportunity to also at last respond to the call by the portfolio committee to come and answer and also account in relation to public transport in general, but also the challenges that we encounter in the, and to some extent try to solicit the support of the committee going forward. I don't know how much time I have, but I'll try to be brief. As the majority of what we will present as a background is known to the committee. My honorable chairperson, I'd like on behalf of my team to apologize that you would want to leave before we realize that on public transport. Personally, I had told the team that, by the way, we heeded the call that we resuscitate Shobhara Lula. We did exactly that. We are going to resume bicycles very soon. And I also hope that we will spare one for you, just so that you continue exercising and continue to come to Parliament. Obviously, health would have been the first one in the first place, but we have considered other members also. For the sake of health, not necessarily to drive the committee. Honorable Chair, but all the points that you have raised in terms of a male-dominated department, I think the ADG at some stage will address that. I just want to put it on record that in the branch public transport, as we have said earlier on in one of the strategic planning sessions, that out of 14 directors, at the time we had two fields, and they were all filled by females, so it was 100% female. Now we have three out of four fields, they are all filled by females, still 100%. That is our branch. I can't anticipate what will happen to the last one. We take in the call very seriously. Chair, the presentation will, as the acting director general has indicated, talk to seek to answer some of the following questions. Why do we find ourselves in this state of affairs? We will unfortunately concentrate more on the subsidy and our views on the subsidy, because we believe that that was the main message from all stakeholders who presented to Parliament.
earlier. And then the situation in regards to the subsidies in the country, and a call from us for assistance in terms of intervention will indicate how far we have gone in terms of in the level of transformation, try to just to be frank, ask for more money from government. But we'll also then respond to some of the concerns raised by the same stakeholders, but in particular then a little bit on the Santaco ones, because I think they're not that we are afraid of Santaco. And I think they touched on a number of other broader issues, including issues of regulation and also issues of legislation. I'll skip this one, but give a brief history. The issues we're having today did not start today. They actually started as far back as when the subsidy was introduced. Somewhere in 1945, I wasn't born there. The question was very, the answer was very simple, and the answer is a call about affordability. We provide subsidy so that the commuters or passengers can afford public transport. That's the main reason that one. But there were a number of events in terms of what then happened around 1996. We believe an important milestone, because that's when we developed the white paper on transport policy. Which white paper that indicated, that introduced the concept of competitive tendering, in a way moving from the old permanent or indefinite payment system or indefinite contracted arrangements between government and bus companies at the time. And then in order for us to move from this never-ending contractual arrangement, which of course would have been constitutional in today's times, by the way, was the signing of interim contracts. And I will indicate some of the issues that came about as part of the argument between government and the industry, but also labor, in relation to moving from long life contracts to tendered or new types of contracts with the definite periods. And as a result, the first approach was to sign interim contracts with those who had a long life contract. With the idea that we will move from interim contracts after particular processes have been undertaken into tendered contracts. And then around 1998, we had the first glimpse of what the first contract would have been. But in 1999, this tripartite agreement between the government and the industry and labor led to what was known as the Heads of Agreement. Simply put, government wanted to get out of perpetual contracts or lifelong contracts. But because there were certain rights inherent in that kind of a system, then industry wanted to have what we would call a first right of refusal in terms of new contract, but set time, once off contract. Labor wanted to be assured that they will not lose their jobs. That is basically what the Heads of Agreement indicated at the time. And then 2000 was then a target date to have all services tendered competitively, open tender. 2001, then there was a moratorium on contract, basically on based on two issues. One was because of the issues around the AIDS of government, but also two. In 2000, we passed the NLCTA, the National Land Transport Concession Act, which acts in terms of the two that acts two, yes, transport planning, required contracting authorities to have transport plans. And there was an attempt by certain provinces to go out on tender without plans. And then I must indicate we were taken to court by the industry that how do we go out without plans. And we lost the case. So some of these things need to be said so that there's a context in terms of what transpires. But going forward, you'll see that the issue therefore became funding. The main issue became funding. We took out that issue around the need for transport planning. Not that there's no need for transport planning, but as a precondition for going out on tender into what we call the National Land Transport Transition Amendment Act. So legislation is amended. But as we were designing and planning and designing the route, Honorable Chair and Honorable Member, and obviously with some view of integrating, those designs came at three times the cost of the services then. Now, meaning then that the budget should have been threefold from 2001 to today, but we never got that till today, 2013, and we're still not, there's no indication that we'll ever get that. I think this needs to just be set on the onset in terms of the challenges that we are facing, that we need and are committed, and we will transform the system. It comes at a cost, and a huge cost. Then there was an issue around the negotiated contract. Firstly, the NLTA indicated that you negotiate based on three things, one of them was to transform the industry, economic empowerment issues. The other one was to deal with the issue around translators, majority of which owned buses at the time. And then the third issue was the whole issue around the integration of services. This slide is basically everything that I have said in terms of the graphic slide before. But I think that what we need to emphasize is that we have all intentions to go out on tender as early as 2000. I have also indicated why we then had to suspend the issue around tender contracts. I have spoken about the issue around the transport plans, but also indicated the issue here that, you see, if you go out on tender, the one big component of the costs of running a bus operation is the labor issue, the labor costs. Now you have a matured industry, I mean the operators, who has people working for them, having gotten what we would have called increases over years. But if you were to then go out on tender, more especially the majority of new entrants, that is the issue where they would want to start at the minimum level. And that is what caused a number of issues. But the major issue in terms of the lack of funding, we will deal with it later on. Well, what we are trying to say here is really what I have said. Some of them would have had to reduce the labor cost by up to 35% in order to be able to be to tender competitively and come at reasonable price. And then obviously jobs would have been lost, as has been to some extent the case where interim contracts were tendered out. And then, but just to indicate that it has been the target, in fact, it was the target, where operators would want to cut costs to the bare minimum. So I think those issues needed to be looked at. And this is the slide that talks to what I had called the heads of agreement. Issues about guaranteeing jobs and then things like provisions. And we, as part of that agreement, also introduced the vast industrial restructuring fund. It's still there. And then there's this issue, the only issue of right of first refusal. That's why we go forward. We favor and we support and we recommend that and we have support for negotiated arrangements. Because tender arrangements will defeat what we want to do, transform the system. Mature industry operators would find ways to come at a reasonable price than a new entrant with massive and huge initial capital costs that they would never even come close to your, if you like, operators who have been operating for some time. Bars would not follow up your money, of course, subsidize it. Father Young, and then they issue it as a part of the tender the cost price, and it will always be very high. I think to some extent, the amendment to the Labor Relations Act, in terms of, in particular Section 197, came to the relief of, in particular, the workers, but not necessarily to the operators, because it talks about where a own concern is the issue, then labor should be absorbed 100%. And it's kind of saying that the car as what they would have been earning at the time that the new operator takes over or enter into a new contract on the same operation. This is the big one. I think the initial ones in the early 2000, the cost was 25% higher. If you had cost everything. But the majority of the designs where integration was key, that talks to the threefold that I've spoken about in particular. But also has certain specifications in the government on issues of planet and safety, issues of greening, specified certain types of engines, and they also came at a cost. But unfortunately, the government does not have that kind of money. That is why we still talk of month-to-month contracts. We'll indicate how this affects the current operation, in particular what the chairperson earlier on talked about. That you will never have a sustainable system if you are on a month-to-month contract. Nobody will give you money to go and buy a bus if you don't show them at least a longer term, 5-year minimum contract. They will never give you finance to go and buy a bus. So what happens is the fleets are not renewed, and as a result, the quality of both the vehicles and the service drop. That is the major, major issues. Now, this is the most interesting part. This is the slide or the graph and the information we give to everybody whom we believe has some pairs of money somewhere. But before 2008 as a year, we were able to meet our obligations in terms of covering the cost when we were paying subsidies to bus operators at the time. And I'll explain why. Because this was based passenger based in terms of the subsidy model. So operators would go out, get the passengers, and then bring out the bill, and then would pay everything, including the issues with seasonal, like in sugarcane plantations and all sorts of things. But they would bring the bill and would pay. Even when we did not have money, we paid. Obviously, that system is not sustainable. It was meant to overheat, unfortunately. That is when we experienced a shortfall of 1.2 billion. That's when Treasury did not give us any more money. That's when we could not pay what we used to pay. And that's when we were hauled before court again. This time around, that we're not honoring the contract because we're not paying as promised in the contract. We went to court. Treasury was direct kicking and screaming. And then they partnered us in court. It was a very, I wouldn't say funny, but it was an arrangement that, because we had said we can't pay because we do not have money. And because we had said that we only had money from China, so China was instructed to give us money to pay the bus operators. And that happened. Now, once we turned to China, China introduced the Division of Revenue Act. Okay, or brought the subsidies, or changed the subsidies from how we were paying to provinces, but put it into one of the dollar grants. That's when the problem from an industry point of view started. One, the allocations were fixed and legislated, and they were never going to increase. But two, we moved out of passenger-based into commuter-based. Because then, at least there is some form of predictability. With passengers, you go out there, collect everybody that you find, and then you get paid on headcount. With commuters, you run the bus up and down with people, passengers inside. So there is a sense, even in terms of budgeting, you have. It should help anyway, but it didn't help in this instance because the money did not necessarily talk to what is on the ground. That is why you would see here, look like we had things under control, but it was not the case. And if you look at the bars, the red and the blue, 2009-10, are a bar. Why? Because we paid what we were given by Treasury, all of it, with no change. Because of this problem here. So Treasury wanted to arrest this situation, but unfortunately in a bad way, because I think you needed to have ramped it up a little bit, so that at least you cover the costs here. And I'm still talking of the current services. I'm not even talking about attended services, no services, or any other, or integration for that matter. That is the challenges that I think the committee would have heard from colleagues from Sabua in particular. That ever door brought hardships. But even for government, this situation, which threatened the then Director General with the jail term, was resolved through a dollar mechanism which was not sustainable. And unfortunately, what I always say is that you got the DG of transport out of jail, but literally put the nine HODs in the provinces at the doorstep of jail. That is basic hello. Because if they had to overspend, they are the ones who go to jail. That's what
unfortunately Dora brought into the system. But there's a background in terms of what we have. We have tender contracts. We do have 66 of them. We still have interim contracts. These are the contracts that could not be transformed into tender contracts because of the issues around money. And then we have a few that were negotiated. Unfortunately, also came at a huge cost and are still causing serious hardships in terms of sustainability. This slide, I want to talk to the last class. One of the problems here is that because of that issues around but month to month, you then are not able to do designs. Not necessarily that you can't do them, but whatever the current services are still operating at the current service level or providing the same type of services. To some extent reduced in certain areas because of the cost and the issue around quality, but this one also, which is an issue of provinces to be dealing with the monitoring and also check this issue around value for money. But the major part from our colleagues from the industry, I'll tell you that they can't even get money. They can't even go to talk to the banks, because when they talk to the banks, they are told that to bring the contract will receive the financing. And then still pretty much the same story. But just to give you a picture, because we have a plan, Honorable Chair. We call it a transformation plan. Or you can call it an integration plan. But that plan has now been lying there for almost 2 years now, I think it's a year and a half. Because when we costed it, it gave us a figure of around just under 13 billion, 12.9. What is this 4.5 billion that you currently are getting? So in terms of if you look at the baseline, which is 4.5, if we were to integrate totally and fully integrate this system and include taxis and small bus operators or small buses, we'd need in the region of 12 billion a year. I will show later on that this is not necessarily insurmountable, because there are a number of funds or grants that if you were to collapse them, they will come close to this field. But unfortunately, we cannot, because you need the balance of this before you even get other people into the fold of whether they are not negotiated. And also get that from here to here, which this one should be the whole bigger part. This is just to show that also, in terms of coverage, the areas that are subsidized in South Africa. I think there's quite a few insignificant services there. But the majority of the areas that are subsidized are in the Gauteng area. Also still, there are services on this side. It's now Gauteng are telling us that the serious movement on this side and it's not subsidized. And then you have got the part of Limpopo in the former Venda area. And then you have got in the Eastern Cape, the Nelson Mandela area, the Alcoa Bus area, and of course here in the Western Cape, or an AB350 also, but of course in the Western Cape, the only area that is subsidized is the Cape Town area. I don't know whether I should call it the Greater Cape Town area, but the rest of the Western Cape is not subsidized. M1T, I won't add it. That is the AB350 operation, very insignificant. And I think This is from the National Treasures, by the way. There are some of the services that are catered for by provinces. Also in the northwest, the majority of them are catered for by the provinces. Where, and this is this figure here. This one and this one. It lose money from the national discount. It's about half, not even half, but I think about 25% of this amount that comes from the province. That's why I say the pockets of money that you can, they can come close to 12 billion. If you talk this 4.5, if you talk about the scholar transport money, if you talk about your tax recap money, if you talk about your PTIS, if you talk about your public transport operation plan, if you bring all of those and integrate the whole system, they will come very close to 12 billion. But you cannot do that. For example, you cannot take away the tax recap money if you do not have a tax plan.
Mm-hmm.
And if you cannot bring in the taxes from day one into this fall.
Mm-hmm.
That is the argument of being put forth to Treasure. I've spoken about the 1.2 shortfall which was later made off by a court judgment by the National Treasury. And then what this slide here shows what we have been getting in terms of the annual escalation based on the previous financial year's straight line. And you can see this drop here. That is where, after being stuck by a court judgment, Treasury then felt that we need to introduce division of revenue. What has changed in terms of the subsidy environment since 2009? The key issues there on the left are what we had hoped and would have wanted to start introducing. And on the right are some of the challenges that we have faced as we were trying to bring in those efficiencies. For example, in terms of rationalization for the services, the bigger challenge there is that you cannot just introduce drastic changes, which are material, to the contract and start issuing a new contract, because that would be breach. Important efficiency to the existing contract system. If we were, for example, to insist on a new fleet, it will not happen because there's no money. If we were to talk about the quality of services, obviously we insist that the bus should not have broken windows and so on and so on. But if you were to introduce other issues, it is just that the cost, I mean the subsidy did not match up to the cost. We will know that year on year, labor on average demands an increase of 9%. And I think, well, in the last past 10 years, the average increase has been around 37%. There are a number of issues, person-related issues, economic conditions. But the allocation that we've been receiving from Treasury has always been inflation-related and nothing else. So it's related, to some extent even below that. And then we had also granted that the municipalities because of the should have transport plans. We are trying. We have a few, but as you would know, Honorable Chair, where I come from, Hamashishan, not only don't they have a transport plan, but I doubt if they know about the NLTA. And not exactly that they don't want to know, but I think it's the issues around the capacity level in the majority of municipalities and the smaller municipalities in particular.
The one interesting issue about DORA was that it was the grant, the Public Transport Authority grant, was later categorized as Schedule 4 grant to provinces. And in terms of the Schedule 4 grant of DORA, there are what you call supplementary grants, meaning that it is expected of provinces to make good the deficits where our contribution from Lenin falls short. That is why I said DORA managed to take out the Director General of National Transport out of aid and literally is wanting to send all the HODs to jail. Unfortunately, this is what we are confronted with, and perhaps, and that's why we are taking it in outright as a national department, because we believe that we still are a Department of Transport, and nationally, and it has to be our responsibility to make sure that even the provinces that are supposed to make good the deficit are provided for, because the money comes from the same purse. I don't want to bore with this slide, but I think what it's trying to emphasize is that we will always need public transport subsidies in this country. And I think there are very few, if any, countries out there that are able to afford a decent public transport system, decent public transport system without providing a subsidy. And that is the reason. And I've indicated the issue is affordability, but also there are a number of factors. You have got problems with special framework in South Africa. In terms of the World Bank, you were supposed to, if really we wanted to break even and not provide a subsidy, one part was supposed to have been saving about 1,200 passengers per day. It doesn't happen. And that is because of the question form in the main in South Africa. You don't have infilling, you don't have high dense corridors where you will have passengers walking often on and off the buses or public transport in particular, not necessarily buses. As a result, you have fewer passengers, they travel long distances, and they've got two unique peaks, one in the morning and one in the afternoon. The only time the buses are full is in the morning, 2 hours of the morning, and 2 hours in the evening. For 6 hours, nothing happens. 6 hours, nothing happens. All the buses are parked there, Marawa Stars, the Lombre, and across the other side at the showgrounds, the tiny metro buses. I've got an office that basically every day look at that kind of a sort of state. But that is the reality of South Africa. And unfortunately, because of those reasons, you need to then subsidize public transport. And it's not basically that we are targeting the operators, but we are subsidizing the commuter so that the transport can be affordable. We will talk about targeting later on as part of what we got from the portfolio committee in terms of the issues related to direct subsidization to the commuter and who then has a choice. But this is the situation, and this is the situation in many countries, even from where the countries where we borrowed the system from. They still heavily subsidized public transport. Australian systems, and including our Scandinavian countries, heavily integrated. Now, this situation cannot be sustained. It needs to be changed, and therefore, these are some of the things, because I wanted to give that longish background, slightly different from what the stood aside from the operator. But we had concerns that definitely one, even the current system, bus only system, struggling. But two, you still have the challenge to transform, integrating taxis and small bus operations into public transport, mainstream public transport, whatever mainstream public transport. But what we are saying is that this is not sustainable, it creates serious uncertainty in the industry, and also for us, it's an indictment on us, as the department, that we sit there helpless, unable to assist, and the commuter or the passenger suffers because of the relative situation. We have AG starting to kill some of these month-to-month contracts and indicating that we have long had the NLCA. We should have gone out on tender. Well, we took the bullet from the AG, but the answer was very simple. There is no money to go out on tender. And if really we were to, therefore, as provinces, to have this negative reporting from the AG, it will come forever until we get money. In the short term, we say let's sustain what we have. It's also even in the public transport strategy. Let's, at least what we have, let's make sure that it is sustainable, it is affordable in terms of the budget allocation. In the medium to long term, we start even in the short term, let's target those that we can transform, and we know them. But let's channel whatever we get as access money to those that we can transform. Let's negotiate them, let's integrate them, let's bring in gradually issues of integration and transformation. Let's bring in your taxi operator. We're not saying, this is what people try to come get other people. They say that, how do you then integrate 100,000 taxis? I say, let's start with those rural areas where routes are being subsidized, and let's transform that system, because we cannot justify honorable check to forever be paying money, government money, to a system that is not transformed. That is the belief that we want to make. And even where we make interventions through BRTs and everything, we are saying don't run parallel systems. Don't run a BRT line parallel to a rail line. And don't run a BRT line parallel to a depth line, for example, or a particular line. Let's integrate the system. And let those new BRT systems for wherever they are designed take into consideration the current operations. Let's get in the operators operating in those routes to be part of that. Let's not compete. There's a beautiful place that just lost its way in the white paper, which said when it comes to commuter transport, there should not be competition on the road. We should rather strive for competition for the road. What it really meant is it should tender. And let the people who want the tenders have the right to operate. That is what it said. But don't go and compete on the roads thereafter. I think that was the main message. So what we are saying is that let's not duplicate systems. When we operate the lower transport mines, as I was saying, that for example, I want to give this example. China will be different with Aryan, Gautrain, Metro Rail, tiny buses, and taxis operating in harmony in an integrated system. There was even a mention that look at what is happening. Next to the Gautrain station, there is a Aryan, China rapid transport system, which shows there is integration. As a transport practitioner, I unfortunately don't agree with that statement. I want to believe that it is duplication. not necessarily in a gray shade, because it's the same mode. If there was a bicycle station, I would agree that it is integration. But a bus station next to a bus station is duplication. It cannot be integration. Unless the routes are not going the same way. But if you look at the design there, they are going the same way. So that one of them is called Gautrain line, and the other should be a bus line. And there's a next door to it, this is a metro station, and Hatfield, I'm talking about Hatfield, I'm not sure. Can never be integration. What does this transformation plan is to do? What we are saying, we're saying that let's negotiate almost everything where we can. If tomorrow we get 12.9 billion, we'll quickly negotiate all the contracts. Definitely get out of the heads of agreement challenges and headaches. Maybe that's why it's called heads of agreement. It's causing serious headaches. And then the idea, therefore, is to integrate, let's say, everybody in and ultimately transform the system. Let's move out from month to month and let's target a few with the current spending level. But even more money, let's then get everything else from month to month to negotiated contracts. You would have dealt with what we call first order contracts, and you would have dealt with the heads of agreement. I'm not saying this should be once-off negotiations. Depending on circumstances, for an example, you can negotiate where it's appropriate and the reasons are valid. You just need to issue standards and national guidelines in terms of how you need to do it. Australia, for example, where we have borrowed this concept of competitive tendering, they are moving very strongly towards negotiated contracts, back to negotiated contracts, because standard contracts, again, very costly, but two, you are limited in terms of the things that you can negotiate. But if we negotiate today, we see, give us so many percent, we want to give it to empowered groupings. But also two, let's negotiate the station like on the quarter service. And if you put in a performance contract in there, or performance arrangement, midstream the contract to come and renegotiate based on circumstances. Because we are not saying that the economy will be down forever. So the economy improves and you need to reduce the subsidy levels. You forever, therefore, negotiate. The only thing is that it should always be a transformed system. It should not be a system where you negotiate with one person and one person forever, because then you go back to old order contracts which were indefinite. Then phase two is that integrate everything else, and that is that cost of 12 billion. But I believe phase one is not necessarily 12 billion. We had approved the National Treasury, and we have been doing so for many months. We continue to do so. It came to Parliament. And I think to an extent, that's why the statements by the Chairperson earlier on, that Treasury give us a few millions to make sure that the current service level don't drop any further. At the rate that they are dropping, we will not have any public transport to speak of in the next 5 to 6 years. Maybe sooner.
People, there's fresh tea. You just grab a cup of tea and you can sit down quietly without interference.
Thanks for the protection, Honorable Chair. The bigger issue here is that all of this would require an amount of money. Yeah, if you want us to integrate the same as a small basket, we are ready. Give us, because there's no money here. But we just need somebody who has money to give us money to be able to deal with this. We can do it. That is exactly what I was saying. But this is your requirement. And they still talk to, I think it is much clearer on the hard copy. It still talks to the current service levels, not even an integrated system. And then the red block, the award is basically required in terms of additional funding. We have just missed 2013-14. Looks like we'll miss 14-15. And if we do that, the trend should be known. So we will not even get a sense again. And the other important thing here that we wanted to indicate is that for some reason, we need to have a review. No, for obvious reasons, we need to have a review of the public transport strategy. I'm sure some of the industry role players would have indicated that. Firstly, this is around 12 cities that don't necessarily hold much water. I've indicated that the department is the Department of Transport, not the Department of 12 cities. And as a result, we need to have integrated public transport plans across the country. But also, let's not try to have one size fits all. Kamarizan, I'm sure, Honorable Chairperson, they don't need BRT. We don't need BRT. We want a decent public transport service. No BRT. And I'm sure it is, including where my XLD comes from. They don't need BRT. They don't need BRT. But even the first cities, you need to reconsider. We should have learned some valuable lessons now, and we have. Unfortunately, we still continue. And unfortunately, it's because some of the stakeholders, even within government, believe that that's what the NLCA and the public transport strategy wants, and that is what perhaps needs to be funded. But if really we were to come to the table and smell the coffee, you don't need BRT in more than 5 cities in South Africa. I don't want to mention the names. But I can indicate that we have spent over 27 billion so far, and we still have quite a few kilometers of BRT lines to talk about. And the very nature of a BRT system is that you needs to be high-dense corridors, and you need to be dealing with issues of travel demand like congestion. Like, let's move the economy into Johannesburg. Let's make sure that the roads are free and are free-flowing. Have BRT there, but in the dense area, because even now, the cost of operations are becoming too huge. But in low density setup, like Khamshishan, you obviously the need is there for availability and access to public transport, and you need the quality buses and taxis to transport people. That's basically what this says. And of course, there are those other dense areas that are, in their nature, your rail corridors. If rail is overflowing in certain parts of the country, we may not necessarily need a bus service or a taxi service or even a BRT service. Mabopane to Swan. Add a couple more trains, you'll be able to move people. The challenge with, again, these modes that are capital intensive is that for 6 hours, you must know that for 6 hours, they will stand there doing nothing because there are no people. Otherwise, we'll find this on a metro bus carrying one old woman, one woman. Not old. Non-waking. Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, non-waking person. Doing nothing in the bus, most of the time, the teenagers. The point is not the age, it's not the old, it's not the person. The point I'm trying to make is that the majority of the time, those buses during off-peak hours, they carry far fewer people. Some of them run up and down, with no passenger at all. That's because they are scheduled services. They need to move at certain times. So I will not move a bus in. But it is
the old man.
The old man. The old man putting a pie. But the morale from a transport point of view is clearly not to demean anybody, but it's just to try to indicate that you need services that talk to and the type of vehicles and solutions that talk to your unique peace in South Africa. I'm responsible for BRC and I'm not necessarily a BRC special. And I need to, because I still believe that there are certain areas where it is needed. But if you build the BRC Hamas Shahan, you are not only going to park expensive buses, low, nice, beautiful buses with air condition, but you are also going to have a dark dedicated lane unused for 6 hours of the day, while traffic to some extent gets congested on the other side. That is what I was trying to mean. Our plan has been approved by everybody. It needed funding. This is just to amplify what I was trying to indicate, that I think if BRT or BRT lines still relevant, but in your bigger cities, for obvious reasons, to relieve congestion, but also free flow of public transport. But in your other sort of bigger cities, but not necessarily main metros, but small, I mean medium-sized cities, you will still need what we call public transport priority lanes. I mean, there are certain areas where they move quite nicely, even in the contra flow. That's why I'm saying before, they go there and they go opposite the oncoming traffic. It's still a very nice model, because during off-peak, you take out those barriers, and then it becomes mid-traffic lane. And that is how much is there in terms of past rural areas, where you would want quality public transport, not the service. There's not even a car road there. The funding and consolidated funding requirements, if we were to integrate the whole system based on current services, this could be slightly higher, because we're talking extensions and new services in other areas, and if South Africa is forever expanding. And we are still having problems, Honorable Chair, with the industry stakeholders coming to the portfolio committee. One day there will be community members coming to the portfolio committees, because there are new settlements that are not being serviced. That is just a comparison of the various grants that we are getting. I really want to tell much is that. And I think lastly, I want to just take 2-3 slides and take into the issues raised by the target in particular is the affected party, but it applies to also small bus operations. Right of first refusal is problematic. We want to believe that it is a commitment that we have made, and to some extent there are certain issues in there that are very key and critical. The issues around loss of income from workers, or even loss of work, needs to be taken care of. The issue that BRTs are not necessarily helping. I must indicate, Chair, that the planned taxi summit, one of the issues, almost all of them are going to be part of the themes of that summit, and they will be dealt with thoroughly, and we have come out of that summit with the answers. Talking to BRT in particular, there is an issue that as government we talked to in 2009, and there was a grouping established called the NGWs, the National Joint Working Group. Among other things, it was to look into how taxis are to participate in the BRT system. I'm not so sure they're still around operating companies that is not necessarily waiting for the taxi industry. We will have to go deeper into this. But what we know is that on the rear fire, they even bought out. I wanted to use the word chased out, but I want to say bought out the Colombian operators who are partners. So they are basically operating the VRC, the rear via, at least on phase one, as a taxi industry. And we were told that there's been a breakthrough in terms of negotiating phase 1B that has just been launched now in October from the downtown Joburg onto the west side to Randburg and the area. There's an urgent need to overhaul the public transport strategy, as I have indicated, to align it with the NDP. As I have indicated, that was a 5-year strategy. It is into year 3. We also are of the view that we need to do a mid-term review of the strategy. Let's get what works and continue with it. What has not worked, review and analyze what went wrong and rectify that. There's a need for total revision of the NLTA. Like I have indicated, one of the commissions of the work groups leading after the summit would be that of legislation and talking to the issues raised by the colleagues, all stakeholders, not necessarily the taxi stakeholders. And that's the main reason why the NLTA could not be passed by this current parliament, unfortunately. It is because we just received feedback, many issues that we needed to then go through. And some of those answers will be answered as we go to, as we prepare for that summit. And out of that summit, we should have a clearer view, which accommodates almost everybody. There is a common statement out there that NLTA is anti-taxi. Yeah, not entirely true, but let's talk to the issues that affect the colleagues. The taxi industry has been excluded in the intermodal meeting committees. We are amending the issues around the IPCs. One view is that it should be all inclusive, including operators, of which taxi operators are a stakeholder. The other view, and coming from us very strongly, is that this is the committee that one would design on the form of plans, the type of plans, and the approach to transport planning, but also even talk of designs. Now, if you have operators who would have to come and contract for services, are you not going to have a conflict of interest when you deal with that? Because this is a structure which also needs to discuss what we call tender specifications, if I may say. So you can't have operators participating in such a structure. Otherwise, they will know even the price up to the last cent. Interim contracts and tender contracts are still untransformed. We have just dedicated the whole hour to it in the presentation, and we say the transformation plan is the way. Taxes are not yet subsidized. We have just acknowledged that. We want to believe that we shouldn't talk about bus subsidy, we shouldn't talk about taxi subsidy, we shouldn't talk about Garula subsidy, we should be talking about public transport subsidy. And then the issue around the cancelling of payment without compensation, as provided for in the NLTA. I think the answer I have given on this one was that where a new service is going to replace an old one or touches on the old one, the current operator must be involved, not only in discussions, but they must be involved in the operations going forward. Our biggest challenge that we are finding is that on Rea Vaya we have taken out about 60 taxis, because then the owners, operators had to be part of the operating company of Reavai. What we are finding out is that the same owners are buying new other vehicles and they are competing on the same line. That's the biggest challenge that we have. We need to just sort out that. But the issue of where it is impossible to therefore incorporate everybody, I don't think entirely that the NLTA excludes the issue around competence. That's why an issue of BRT is always a subject of intense negotiations with the current operators, including the taxis. And I think there's been an appreciation, even when we talk about the public transport infrastructure grant to deal with this issue, of those that will therefore lose business as a result of new systems being put in place. What we are saying, government has adjusted targets from 12 cities to 5 cities by 2015. I've just indicated, it's not necessarily a decision by government. We have not taken that decision, but we are just throwing out issues and opinions that we want to believe that not all 12 cities are, say, BRC cities. They are all IBTN cities, but not necessarily BRC cities. For instance, the municipalities must be instructed to finalize the IPTN before April 2018. This was just put in the form of a demand. I think we can agree with the first part of the demand, but I think the issues around the deadline depends on the capacity within those municipalities and provinces and other major factors. Negotiation process must start commence before the end of May. I've just indicated how our plan talks to negotiation as this way, more especially in the first phase. But again, you can't negotiate if you don't have money. Otherwise, you'll negotiate, have design and plans and not be able to fund them. And they will guard us like the 2000 plans. Santiago must actively be involved in BRC processes. It is a condition in the DORA framework for the PTIF that current operators must be involved when new systems, including the RTs, are introduced. In conclusion, everything else that is a challenge in public transport has got, to some extent, an answer in the National Public Transport Transformation Plan. We are not saying the blueprint, we are not saying it is a be and all. We are saying there are issues in there that can still be improved. So it should not be thrown out of the window. But for us, we are saying we've got some answers in terms of transforming the system in that place. But we just need funding to be able to take this forward. We've been talking to Treasury, we've now worked in provinces after the 10x10 meeting on budget. So we are making some noise to slogan now because it includes provinces. Honorable Chairperson, that was our attempt to deal with the issues, but also to then put the budget case or response in terms of what we are doing and what we are facing as challenges. And I thank the chairperson of the committee for being patient with me. I thought I would be short. And there are just so many issues. Thank you. Thank you.
meeting ne ayo so 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 ya
eh
una bolsa ma beva te
or no pesta aule nikam no pesta
recapitalization projects are on hold everywhere. I don't know if Bolton Harrow is in the same position, I assume so, but we can't wait for one day when we get this new environment where everything is sorted. We have a crisis now. The crisis is this year. And looking at the chart that we saw there, it looks like there's going to be a crisis in 2 years' time again when the increases are going to be so tiny that you're going to have another collapse. And I know that there's multiple problems. There's small bus operators that we have to deal with. There's the taxi switchover that we have to deal with. But, you know, with all due respect to the taxi owners, there's no recap for buses. There's no recap for buses. So, you know, we're in a situation where it's a crisis. And I want to know what engagements have happened with Treasury to discuss the funding crisis, especially over the next 3 years while you're adjusting all the contracts, bringing out the various national transport plans that are required to adjust the environment. We have a short-term crisis, and Treasury needs to understand that crisis and to deal with it. Otherwise, we're going to see more and more buses break down, and you know, public transport is going to go backwards. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Sidwele Chen of Sabor. Looking at the concerns that were raised by Santago, they are relevant indeed. But I think the department is also excluding the small bus operators. If they will have to take Santago on board, of which I believe it to be a good thing, they must also get the small bus operators to be part of whatever will be discussed there. Again, looking at slide number 38, the small bus operators are still excluded in there based on the methodology that is used by cities when they are trying to implement the BRT. And it is a big problem, to be honest with you, Madam Chair. Particularly in Gauteng, I'm not quite sure of Western Cape and the other cities whereby it is still unfolding. The small bus operators have been excluded because the methodology explains how to be involved. If you are a current operator on the particular route that will be run by the BRT, then you are part of, and then you will gain. Looking at the history of the small bus operators, there is no way where they can be involved according to the methodology, because they have been excluded a long time ago. They have been operating hand to mouth. And then really, I believe it will be unfair in a new South Africa that small bus operators can be excluded. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thanks, Madam Chair. The name is Tavelo Mageta. I am from the Northwest Transport Investments, which is very much part of Savoa. Honorable Chair, as much as one appreciates the depth and the appreciation by the National Department of Transport of the problems that are actually facing the industry, and really we appreciate that all the way they have been very much part of us. What becomes our problem is that the circumstances as they are, with a capping of escalation rates for the subsidy content, that was introduced together with the PTOC as way back as 2008-09. The progressive deterioration has continued over the past how many 4 years, and the consequence of that really is that as the honourable member here referred to PATCO, it is a serious introduction of inefficiencies in anyone operator. It goes to the heart of saying, contrary perhaps to the projection of 4 years that the DG made, from where we are as operators, we are facing a serious problem that the next 2-3 years actually is a realistic projection that we are likely to collapse. This is in the context then that one is appealing to whosoever really has leverage or capacity to lobby, capacity to take the message forward, to impress upon the agency to deal with this matter. And in particular, we have to talk to a contract term that is commensurate with the service life or the economic life of the thing. A 7-year contract is not very helpful because you can't recover. And actually, very much, we need something that is consistent with the age of the service life that is actually prescribed in the model contract of 15 years, and at least we can look at something like 12 years, then that would be more like it. There's a lot I could say, but thank you. Yeah.
No, thank you, Chairman. The name is Runa Mabutelezi from the taxi industry, Santa Cruz in particular. Yes. Honorable Chair, members, I think we firstly one needs to appreciate the opportunity that has been provided to debate these issues. And one must thank the portfolio committee for the kind of work we have done so far and the kind of interest we have shown in this matter. It's unfortunate that you are in your last mile, and we hope that the incoming committee will have the same kind of interest on this matter. Our problem is that in the taxi industry, since the dawn of democracy, we've been crying about this matter. And I was looking at the presentation that the department has done in very good detail. I must thank the DDG. But our problem is that short term, we don't know what does it mean, because this matter has been outstanding for very long. So my first question will be, what is the short term? How long is the short term? Probably because we all have money problems. The problem is what end of the money problems we are in, less money or more money. Those who are getting subsidy of 4 billion, they might have a problem, but at least they are getting something. Their problem is whether they can recapitalize, and others might behave with the current system because they still get money. If it's sustained further, it still works for them. But for more than there's an industry and for commuters of taxes, which we can all argue in different numbers, but we know it's over 65%. Without any doubt, is that they continue to be discriminated unfairly. Remember that side. So we're seeing an unfair discrimination in terms of taxi commuters not receiving subsidy. So really, I think our major concern is when all the answer that there's no money, it's very easy to give. But we really are eager to understand when this matter will be finally resolved. What time frames are we looking at? I know there will never be enough money, but we need a solution to this problem. I think that's precisely my question in terms of, I think I appreciate the answers that were given around processes that are in place in terms of policy review, etc. But I think issue of subsidy, if we can get an indicative answer in terms of how soon should we expect this matter to be resolved finally. Thank you.
Okay, the last head off.
Thank you. I'm Aras Lezwane from Santago. Just to add on the previous speaker, how can the department include us in the interim arrangement? Because by the time they conclude the interim arrangement, the taxi industry would no more be there in terms of the subsidy.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am. My name is Rebecca Makosha Mutsete, member of this committee. Honorable Chairperson, that day, Madavate, we look at processes of all the duplication and the integration. I'm referring this on Hatfield particularly because they say Gautrain buses and the TRT, the new buses at Swan. They are all the same line. And then I didn't hear saying anything about their plan because we are next to next month is a long time for the holidays. What is going to happen about the buses, the long distance buses, like Greyhound, and the other buses that make a lot of accidents on the road. And then the issue I want to refer is to Santaco, because they've launched Operation Togomel. Is this really going to work? Because I'm saying this because we can't see them on the road. You know, we launched Operation Togomela. It was on Friday. But the next day, they were wearing their cap written Operation Togomela. They were on the road fighting close to the road. This one must go with the cap writing Operation Togomela. Was having a problem, and then I just stand on the side of the road and looking at them. Yesterday we were doing this, today is this. Thank you, Chairperson. Over to you, Department.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think I will just talk to some, but also give Matavate at least the opportunity to respond. But I think before I respond to some, I think it's just to again indicate the commitment first. But also along with that commitment, the reality that there is a challenge. And that challenge is Department of Transport. And it's going to be unfair on the department side. To particularly from Ungulan to commit to time frame, because now we will now commit and then say this is what we want to do. But let's just say the commitment is there that the department wants to bring in into give us the time, because the thing is that if we give an indicative framework of and define what our short term means, it may be a challenge because there are certain hurdles that we need to pass. Let's take an example. Let's say give a tax. If the day he owns two taxes and the register that they say pay to the red, those are some of the legislative minds that from our side we need to have. And it may be something that we may not be the impediment. It may be that the open time. But I'm saying, let's not put time in, let's endeavor all of us in making sure that we transform, because we're committed to transform. So it's, and I suppose the commitment to transform needs to translate into the chance that the sector gives us and supports its engagements with the treasure. You should all remember, yes, the department, I'm sure you saw on the closing slide, my tablet is closed. Department along with Treasure had indeed formed a task team to look at this. Because these are matters that are serious in nature, and these are matters that really indeed requires that department looks at the manner in which it brings on board taxis, small bus operators into the gym, so that the subsidy regime covers everybody and no one is one in the periphery, as it were. But no one, therefore, does not benefit what truly, and if indeed truly they are given a public service, that then the state must be responsible in making sure that it provides the necessary funding for those two to operate. I think some of the issues that have been raised, I think Matabata would talk to that because he leads the task team that is in the process of making sure that this reality of transform in the sector happens. Thanks, sir.
Sorry, Matabata, before you. You see, now I think everybody wants to have a bite in a very limited time. Let's not go to town answering a question and come back and answer a question, or the response as well. Yeah, what's the way?
All I will say, I'm going to advertise using the kind of buses we will take along. Chair President, I think the long and short, and perhaps the overarching answer is that we are reading, we've been reading. I mean, yes, we might not talk, we can't talk about time frames because it's dependent on a number of issues, key to which is money. So, we are reading, our plan is ready, it's ready. If we get money, we'll implement it later. And the approach is negotiate everything and then integrate everybody into those negotiated arrangements or negotiated contracts. That's the bottom line. And it's a pity that the colleagues from in this industry, I not hear any one of them talking about the commuter here. And look like even our colleagues from Sarago are saying you are leaving us out. And I want to make it very clear. We are not subsidizing operators. We are subsidizing commuters indirectly. That's why we are saying one of the issues that we want to look at and we want to explore, unfortunately there are very few examples, is how we can directly fund the commuter. And we no longer talk about the operators, whether it's buses or trains or taxis. And then the commuter has a choice. Unfortunately, we need to get out of the current contractual arrangement and carefully so. That is the big challenge. When we realized that we are running short of money and we will run short of money, and when we had representations from the bus industry as a start, even before we took in transformation, we approached it. So in the interim, that's why we are now talking about 50 million. Earlier this year, we wrote to Treasury requesting additional funding for this current financial year. We got zero. We went to Minimac. We got support. The minister was directed to write a letter to the Minister of Finance. The response was the same. I suspect that it's given to the same officials to respond on behalf of the minister that there is no money. But the view from Treasury, and to some extent a bit unfair, but right, is that you will need to demonstrate that you have brought inefficiencies into the system. Their own belief is that there are a lot of inefficiencies and that could even lead to fewer demands, lesser demands for money. Our point of view is that to bring inefficiencies, you need money. Simple. It is a new bus, it needs money. But we are at a stage right now where we have a joint committee that is structured by the 10x10 grouping. Looks like the allocations for the next MCF are being finalized. What we are seeing is still not necessarily encouraging, but we continue talking. Some of the issues are just a reiteration of what I have said, because I have said to support all of you. The issue around the keeping of escalation, which does not recognize actual escalator costs. All costs are not necessarily considered. We have indicated that that is very problematic. And from a transport point of view, from us, we'll always understand what are the cost drivers. Unfortunately, we are not, and we do not get them that support. And as that, I think the demands of government are also that huge. 7-year contracts is also not as simple. I don't know how, and I do not necessarily speak about 7-year contracts. It is, in legislation, it's a minimum. And I think the issues around the negotiated approach will obviously take those issues into consideration and talk about the length of the contract. Again, here, it should be noted that there are issues around integration. So when you talk about the contract, let's not talk about only contracts or 12-year contracts, because we don't want to, again, still perpetuate a longer-term contract. We still exclude others that would have wanted to include. I wanted to understand the concern from some the small bus operators that they needed to be included into the summit discussion. It's something that we will look at, but it has been pronounced and as directed by the authorities to be the Texas summit. But we look at, and we have forums and platforms where we talk and discuss with the small bus operators. I think for the record, the department was key and instrumental in forming the small bus operators unit or council. So we have got no intention of excluding them. We need to find a way of pressing upon, and I'm sure that as we approach the summit, these are the things that we'll talk about. We need to find a way of how we include people who were not previous operators on, I think, what was given as a BRT route. Because I think the focus and the approach is now, as is, that only those that are affected by the BRT line are the ones that are put into the negotiation. And I think it's a valid point that people who would not have been, who would want to be, and unfortunately in terms of the pressure, we are obliged to start where we're supposed to start. But that's, we welcome any suggestion in that regard. Short term will always be short term. I think there's an outcry that they will tell us that we need to arrest what we have so that it does not deteriorate further. And we want to keep it very short. But if you bring in the longer term issues into the short term, the chances are that you will not even engage on the short term issues. And the chances are that the system will collapse. And it is collapsing in front of our eyes. So we have not necessarily want to perpetuate the status quo, but we have a responsibility for the sake of the commuter as a person to ensure that even what we have does not deteriorate. Duplicated versus integrated, we try as much as possible to interrogate the plans for municipalities, but especially because they get funding from us. And we do highlight some of these points. Unfortunately, I think within municipalities also they've got their own visions and plans and have got a way in terms of how they would want to design their own system. But we've made it very clear that we will not subsidize a duplicated system. But we also, and we've made some progress, ADG, through the chairperson, how trained buses are not prepared to carry people who are not necessarily going to the Rotten station. So there is some convergence in terms of using those kinds of buses. I've always said that on Church Street in the morning, a Northwest Star bus passes by packed to the Rutgers. The taxi passes by full packed. The Patco bus on the same route packed. Gautrain bus, quarter full. Because it takes people to only those who go to the Gautrain station only. So that is the issues that I always complain about in terms of except that you can still integrate without money, even now, even on what you have. Long haul buses and accidents, I think this is a safety issue to some extent. It deals with the issues of our roadworthiness, and it has to do with the issues of enforcement and traffic officials in the provinces in this regard. Well, I think the other question was for Hlokomela, which we commend and we believe that is a positive safety campaign. We just don't believe that this is a way to mend a roadblock that would want to exclude others from operating. But that's a safety campaign that is what and what one does. I always give an example about how a taxi plunged into a river in Witbank. 11 people died. Within an hour, we knew the people and their families were notified within an hour, because part of the Hlokomela strategy is to ensure that the taxi leaves the passenger details at the rank, with the rank managers or rank marshals. So it was very easy, quick to notify the family members. And that's what we comment about the initiatives like Hlokomela. Thanks, Chair.
Before I go to new questions, top, any follow-up? Follow-up. Okay. I'll take new questions after the follow-up question.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. Maybe what I can say on the follow-up is to convert it to a recommendation, because I know it might be difficult for the department to answer now. To say, as we have indicated, that we are mindful of the passenger, to say the short term, as we have already alluded, that we cannot put the time frame. Can we humbly request the department to go and consider the interim arrangement, to say, while we're on the medium and long term, at least the little change that is there, we can develop this kind of a plan to say at least the other sector benefits from the passenger subsidization. Thank you.
Recommendation and request. Also, a follow-up question?
Chop. Madam Chair, thank you very much. The position that I wanted to have also going on as a recommendation, I think I must phrase it that way as well, and thanks to the gentleman there. There's a case to have uniformity in dealing with a subsidy currently. When we say subsidizing operator, we are forever conscious of the fact that that subsidy is passed on to the commuter. But we need to have uniformity where modus operandi at Limpopo, how the subsidy is structured in relation to the quantum of the service, how it is structured also in the Northwest. We believe there has to be uniformity in all the provinces where these things are basically dealt with. And it's in the NLTA, I think. I read that it must be uniform. So I'm afraid I have to say government is in breach itself, you know, of its very law. And that's about something that must go into that recommendation. And to the best of your ability, DG, to appeal to Treasury and whosoever has got the powers and the best strength, really. Otherwise, we just finished, which is to the detriment of the commuter. I think as we speak, it might not be explicit, but that's what it's always implied when you talk.
Recommendation, new questions?
My name is John Swartz. I represent the Small Bus Operators Council Western Cape and serve on the National Executive Committee of Small Bus Operators. What concerns the small bus operators in the first place, I want to thank the national government. For the first time, I could say, in history, that I did hear that our name has been written there in the books and on paper, Small Bus Operators. It was a long suffering, very long. And as time comes nearer and bigger operators like the BRTs, we are being pushed further out. If there is not really coming somebody which rescue us, and I feel today this is the rescue day. You know, we as the small bus operators was there long before the taxis was there. We did operate with horse cars and horses. We did operate later with buckies to transport our communities, sport clubs, churches. We did that. But after it became so luxury that we couldn't anymore afford that the bigger operators be overwhelmed.
Sorry, Lotuan, are you in the same meeting? Okay.
And as you know, we as small bus operators, what we got today only a crumb, and that is a smaller transport. It is where our people, there is a lot of graveyards if you go to the royal, to the rural areas of buses. People which can't anymore afford the way the scholar education department handling that operators. They're always taking the lower bit. There is people operating for 20 cents a kilometer per bus of a child. And certain times you tender for 100 children, and if their children get less, there's maybe 50 children, they subtract that from you. You did prepare you for the for 100 children, buy buses for that. But later on you said 50 children and did all that expense. Mm-hmm. I must say there's a lot of suffering going out there. And I think more and more as the BRT systems comes in place, there was maybe a party line or groups which we can take around. But now the BRT are running all the areas. By Sea Point. We did have sometimes trips, weekend trips, that is gone because the BRT is a very cheap, a very good system which is less to pay on that bus. People make use of that bus. If we not come part of the mainstream, we will be fade away completely. Thank you.
Do you want to respond on that? Is there anything to respond on? Okay.
I think that there are all comments, but just to indicate that part of what we are doing is the scholar transport policy, which will be policy now very soon, is to set standards and guidelines and to ensure that people are not made to suffer because of tax structures.
My name is Thijs Hines. I'm one of the directors of PUTCO, also a member of the Sabawa ISCO. The one point I just want to make that perhaps did not come out clearly enough in the presentations this morning, and I think the Department of Transport did a good job in presenting the facts exactly as they are, is that in our discussions with National Treasury, it is their view that the provincial departments of transport must supplement the public transport operations grant from National. If you read the NLPA, that is very clearly stated and also in the Freedom of Revenue Act, that it is a provincial grant and that must be supplement or a supplementary grant. It must be supplemented by the provinces. Now discussions with the provinces. They are ever saying that they don't have the money and are not providing for it. And that is something that we need to look at as well, is that disconnect between the funding provided by the PTOG and the lack of funding by the provinces. Because I think the intention of the law is not being executed. I think there's a planning gap as far as that is concerned. In our discussions with Treasury, we explained to them that bus companies are like dams. You've got water flowing into it, your revenue coming from passengers and subsidies, and you've got expenditure going out. And if more money is flowing out than what is coming in, you will have a situation that bus companies come under pressure financially, profitability point of view, cash point of view, that is impacting on the service of our passengers. The 6,000 buses that are subsidized transport approximately 400 million passengers a year. And there's about 15,000 people employed in our industry. And that is what we need to protect now. As the National Department correctly said, that is failing and there's an urgent plan required to stabilize that, because there's the bridge taking us to the future situation. If we allow that to fail and be destroyed, then we're going to have great difficulty fulfilling our future plans.
Honorable Chair, it is true that DORA is a supplementary grant. If it's not, the White Council Benchmark was supposed to be a top-up to provinces. Not that provinces should top-up, but in less than half. The challenge and the problems are historical. This has always been underfunded, even when the function was taken to provinces. That is why we are taking the fight as national and talking for the whole country. And our belief is that we get money from the same ports. And when we talk to Treasury, we're not saying the money should come to national through this DORA, increase the DORA fund. We are saying the costs for public transport for the country is this much. If it goes to provinces and it comes back into public transport, we don't have a problem. The only challenge we're having is that National Treasury does not speak like us when we speak as the transport sector, because they were supposed to be speaking as treasuries, national including provinces. But I think that's the main reason why at 11 by 10 there was this agreement that we need to rope in everybody else. Because for us the interest is that we need to get them more funding for the sake of South Africa. Then it can go to wherever it is supposed to be going. I think that is the message. And I want to agree. The provinces are also individually, they're struggling when they go to their own treasuries and they get nothing. Zero. And this message does not necessarily go to national treasury alone. But they send it for funding. We are talking to whoever has the pass. If it is in the provinces, we are talking to them. Made provision for public transport in those provinces.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Kwesi Kedeja. I am from the South African Small Bus Operator Council. I've got two points to make. Point one, we hear the established operators talking about subsidy having to be, the need for subsidy to be increased, which we do not have a problem with that. But at the same breath, it is our view that instead of just being one-minded or focused one way, it would be proper if we bring everybody on board in terms of subsidy. Point number two, that the Matabati made mention of the fact that there's a need for a way to include those who are not directly or currently affected by, with regard to the implementation of BRT. I would believe that there would be, in situations where there are compelling circumstances, when you interpret legislation, it must not be interpreted narrowly. Which is the case at the moment. People are basically just looking at those people who are affected to the exclusion of all the others. I'll give a very good example, the mining charter. If you look back before 1994 in this country, there was no one single particularly disadvantaged individual who owned a mine. But today, if you were to ask how many, you have got millionaires and billionaires in the mining industry. That happened because legislation made it possible that they need to be included. So we would recommend that they, even in the transport sector, there need to be some policy similar to the mining charter that will then be all inclusive. Because without that, we will be forever out there in the periphery. Thank you.
I'll
Gribble Chairperson, it was I think Chairperson, surely as the committee, we have listened very attentive to the presentation made here this morning. And I think that the plans that have been taped in this house, in this meeting, surely shaping the public transport, the approach to public transport is being shaped so that we talk public transport, because we need to synergize this fragmentation approach to transport in general in South Africa. It needs us to think creatively, out of the box. It needs us also that we learn the best practices from other countries, so that when we reshape our transport system in South Africa, nobody is denied or is put at a disadvantage. But the second one, Chairperson, I think the department, through its principal, political principal, will have to speak to the principal of Treasury, the ministers, the political principal, the Minister of Finance and the Minister of Transport, having presented a case by the DG, the DG. Surely he must escalate the debate so that we find sanity on the matter, because everybody here seems to me is clamoring for money, funding. But also that funding, we need to develop a care model that will make everybody happy. I know that not everybody will be happy. There will be gaps in between. But surely through interacting with our counterparts, we have to find creative ways of bringing this matter to a conclusion. Because it has been coming for quite some time. Everybody now is itching. They are asking time frames and so on. And yet we can't say these are the time frames that we are committing ourselves. I mean, I speak, you know, the department, that's what I'm saying. But surely we'll have to do our oversight more robustly on this point so that nobody is disadvantaged. If you listen also to the bus, small bus operators, the established ones, each one is defending history in the entry. So we'll have to find the middle ground. Otherwise, I'm happy. Maybe the committee at some point in time will have to sit, come together and find time to reflect on the presentations and assist the process how to go forward. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. I apologize to the whip of the committee. After leadership has spoken, shouldn't be speaking. But I think I apologize. I think one of the things we just want to impress is taking from the queue is ready. In fact, MINMEC had taken a decision that minister to minister, there must be those discussions. So therefore, it then escalated beyond what we've engaged and exhausted a number of processes. But of course, would continue to engage. But I think now it's at the point where we're now going to get the two political groups to really resolve this. At the heart of our interest, as we really say, from the department's perspective, is to make sure that everybody in the net, and bring people into the net for the better good of this party that is called public transport. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Department. Thank you to everybody who attended this meeting. I hope everybody is satisfied. From here, we know what we're going to do. We've heard, we're satisfied, we ask questions, and the responses. But what I want to say is, Santaco, we are going to a festive season now. Please talk to your drivers, talk to your taxis. And I want to warn you, every one of you, some have parents, some have families, they need you. Don't overdo things. Yes, be happy, but don't overdo. And you will be blaming people in the Department of Transport. You will be blaming the Taxi Association. Yes, it is you. And we still need you. We still need you. Go, and then in January, when you come back, I'll be here with wish you happy Christmas and a prosperous New Year. And all the blessings, giving you all the blessings, all of you. You make me that fun.